They live where you can't see them for a very good reason. And they come out at night, during the day too, to steal the precious fruits of our labor. Their unrelenting assault on our good nature leads us to ask, how can we get that damn gopher?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1388th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show and podcast. Or hey, perhaps among our friends over there in Alongapo, who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, if there is one way to get a conversation going with farmers and gardeners, it is to ask how they get their gophers. Why, the mildest of mannered persons will, in an instant, become a cold-blooded killer. Yeah, those of us who till the soil share one great hatred, and that is of the gopher. And so today we ask, how can we get the gopher? And who better to ask how to outwit that little monster? Thomas Whitman, the non-toxic humane pest control expert at Gophers Limited. Thomas, welcome back.
Hi there, Michael. Welcome to be back. Glad to be back.
Yeah. Fair warning, I should tell the audience that we're longtime fishing partners with Thomas. And so when you're a fishing partner with somebody, you have a special bond there that not quite like gophers, those catching fish, much more fun.
Oh, yeah. Although catching gophers is like fishing.
Oh, how's that?
Well, you go out there and set a trap and hopefully you'll catch something.
There you go.
Just like fishing.
Just like fishing.
Although I think gopher catching is better than fishing in terms of quantity.
Probably. maybe not so quantity, but especially when it comes to how much of it you eat. Does anybody ever eat gophers?
Oh, that's a good question, Michael, because, you know, I used to work at the farm and garden at UCSC, mm-hmm. and we had like 40 apprentices every year, and they were all young and, you know, open to anything, and we were catching gophers, and first of all, they didn't like catching gophers because it was their first experience with catching an animal. And killing it. Yeah. So they didn't like that. But then they were like, well, we should do something with this food. And so almost every year, someone comes up with a new recipe for eating gophers. And in all the years I did that, never did they come up with a palatable recipe.
Recipe, never did. I know that there was something about young students like that. My wife tells a story about who was teaching up there. Tells a story about one pair of young ladies from the suburbs of Los Angeles came to her and told my wife the story of how they found a dead possum on the road.
Yeah,
and cooked it up and ate it. And I was raised on wild game, but I never came that close to eating a possum.
I never ate a possum either.
No. So today we're here to talk about that varmint, the gopher. Now, you're from the East Coast. Do they have gophers on the East Coast?
No, gophers are on the West Coast all the way to past the Rockies, and they're in the Great Plains and Texas and all that area. But when they get to the Appalachians, there's nothing on the other side of the Appalachians in terms of gophers, except in Florida. Hmm. I guess they're like, you know, those kind of gophers that they go down there for the weather.
For the weather, yeah. They're in North Dakota for the summer and head down south for the winter.
But oddly enough, there aren't any, but there's moles all over the West Coast and the East Coast, but none in the central part of the U.S.
Yeah, well, as long as we're tending to ground dwelling critters. You have the gophers, which eat garden plants, right? They're plant eaters. That's what they eat.
Their jaws and teeth are made for chopping and grinding, whereas the mole, its skull kind of looks like a dinosaur head, like a prehistoric dinosaur's. Lots of teeth and no molars. They don't grind at all. They just tear.
They just tear. What do they tear?
They tear flesh. They eat worms and they eat grubs and things like that. But not only do they tear, and there's this book called Of Moles and Men. Fantastic book if you're interested in moles. But in it, they talk about where moles migrated to the North American continent from, which was between the Tigris and Euphrates River. And moles used to be above ground.
The cradle of civilization.
That's right.
Yeah.
But now they're underground animals that hardly ever come out, and their eyes and ears have
disappeared,
just disappeared. But
so gophers, voles, moles.
Right. There's voles are also known as meadow mice. They're these really kind of small mice with a short tail and a really flat nose. And the interesting thing about these three animals is they all use the same burrows.
Oh.
So when a gopher digs a burrow, he'll eventually abandon the earlier part of the burrow system. And then if a mole is cruising around and digging around and ends up finding a burrow that's open, he'll just jump in there and use that burrow.
Move right in.
And then if they meet each other, they could fight because they're both territorial animals. But then the third one is the vole. The voles will use abandoned burrows as well because they don't like to dig burrows. They like to just live in burrows. So I had this one.
They're like renters.
Kind of like that.
Right.
I had this one client. It was a winery that had a really nice tasting room and had this beautiful lawn, and they were plagued with gophers. So they hired me, and I started catching gophers up there, and I got rid of all the gophers, and then
the
moles came in.
Yeah.
And then we caught the moles, and then the voles came in. And then when I was trapping the voles, I started catching mice that were also raiding the voles' food catches. And the reason is because all these animals store food. Although moles store completely different foods than gophers and voles do. They're into greens and seeds and stuff. But what's interesting about moles is that they have a venom in their saliva. So when they bite into a worm, for example, they actually paralyze the worm.
Kind of like a snake bit.
Kind of like that. Yeah. They call them zombie worms.
Wow.
Because they just lie around in this little place they make underground to store the worms.
So they hang around here until I get around to eating you then.
Well, if they can't get enough food, they have to eat their body weight almost every day. Wow. So if they can't find enough food, they'll just go to the dungeon full of those worms.
They really are prehistoric monsters down there, right underneath our feet.
Yeah, they're really interesting animals.
So, the larger ground-dwelling critters that we also have to deal with, we have prairie dogs, we have ground squirrels.
Well, in California, we don't have prairie dogs, we have ground squirrels.
Ground squirrels.
Yeah, and there's other burrowing animals that are problematic, like rats, for example.
Right. But so there's a whole world living beneath our feet.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Then the one that really challenges us with respect to growing crops.
Well, that would be gophers.
Gophers.
In fact, gophers are responsible for... Well, I was doing a study when I was at the university, and I was... after we started a new crop, I would count all the different crops. And every day I'd count how much we lost due to gophers. And most farmers lose like 20 to 30% of their crops to gophers. It's a big deal.
That's a huge deal. And I mean, if that's what you're doing for a living and you're losing 20% of your income.
Well, the way rodents...
Or if you're gardening and you're losing 20% of your roses.
Or all of them.
Or all of them.
See, the way it works in the rodent world is that the more their food there is to eat, the more and bigger litters they have. And soon their populations are so high that they just eat more than you expect them to. So at some point, you have to intervene and manage the herd.
And if you don't, they just take over, and there you go.
Well, a lot of people want to just share what they have. And a lot of people have said, oh, you know, those are for the gophers.
Thomas, they never call you, though, do they, the gopher getter?
They eventually do.
They do. So they tolerate the gophers and the populations and all the little gopher pups, and pretty soon... they're overrun. It's like custard to greasy grass. What do you do?
That's right.
They have to do something.
It gets out of control, and then they eat more than they are given. As
well, your moniker says you're a non-toxic kind of gopher-getter.
Yeah, we don't. In fact, our whole mission of our company is to get people to not use poisons. So we have looked at all kinds of things that are... ways that are kind of based on the characteristics of the way the animal acts to either fence them out or figure out different liquids and smells that stop them.
Isn't that like the essence of herding?
It is. Yeah, you gotta get them to go somewhere else.
You have to know the animal and to know what it wants to do and what it doesn't want to do.
And there's certain plants that that will actually you can use as a barrier for gophers, things that are herbaceous and, you know, strong smelling, like rosemary or lavender. They're plants that gophers never touch.
So as a non-toxic gopher getter, you're kind of like the Dr. Temple Grandin of gophers, though, right?
Temple Grandin. Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Who was quite a character because she quite understood animals.
Oh, you know, she's brilliant. I actually have met her several times because, used to be part of the EcoFarm conference team, and we had her speak a few times.
Well, I've had her on the food chain a few times, and I fell in love with the gal.
She's brilliant.
Brilliant, brilliant person.
Yes. And her story is so interesting. In fact, this is a little off topic, but her story, because she is an autistic person, but when she was a kid, her mom knew she was autistic, and the first thing that she kind of did was give her chickens. And, you know,
wow.
Jane Goodall got her start with chickens, too.
Yep.
So the chickens...
chicken cuddlers.
Mom, the edge that she could communicate with these birds really well.
And thus became a communicator.
That's
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. And by golly, we have our friend Thomas Whitman back after a long time. I don't know why it's been so long.
What
could
age.
Be more fun talking about gophers? And that's what I love to do, because nothing inflames the passions of mild-mannered people better than the gophers that are eating up their garden and stealing all of their precious work that they put together. So stay tuned. We will be right back.
now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, yes, we are back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. And today we're taking on gophers. Yes, those dirty little son of a guns that eat up all of your tomatoes and roses and just about everything that you want, they want too. Amazing how that works, Thomas.
Well, they eat a lot of what we eat, especially the vegetarians in the crowd.
Amen.
They don't eat meat or fish.
Okay, so they'll lay off my ribeye steak that I put on the grill then, unlike the dogs.
Actually, fish emulsion is one of the deterrents I use a lot.
Really?
If you put fish emulsion in a gopher hole, he'll dig a new hole somewhere
else. Dig a new hole someplace else, a real easy deterrent. So that's what we were talking about. You got to get to know the critter. And when you know gophers, you know they're vegans, vegetarians, and they don't eat meat, and so pour some fish emulsion, maybe blood meal.
Blood meal would work.
Yeah.
The other thing that works really well is castor oil. You know, we're a little older, Michael. This, you might remember that your mom might have given you castor oil when you were a kid.
I do not remember any castor oil ever in my youth.
Well, my mother did. And
most mothers, I think, did.
They would give you like a tablespoon of castor oil, and you'd have to hold your nose and swallow it. And the way it worked for me was I never told my mom I was sick anymore. So anyway, castor oil is a good one.
They have to get to know the animals, right?
Yeah.
The kid.
People put, you know, different kinds of urine. And by the way, a lot of people buy these fancy urines on the internet, you know, like a mountain lion urine or lion urine. And all that stuff. But the ingredient in the urine that affects the gophers is ammonia. So I usually tell people to make their own.
There you go.
Because urine has
in a ammonia. Pot. Go ahead.
And it's portable. The other thing I like to teach people how to do is how to make barriers to keep gophers from getting into your garden in the first place. And so we manufacture these gopher baskets that are made of stainless steel, high-quality stainless steel.
Has to be stainless steel.
Yeah, they last for years, and they're really heavy-duty. We figure they last 20 to 40 years. I'm not old enough to know yet, though.
Wow.
So you know, the other thing we do also is we actually...
We're talking about Gophers Limited.
Gophers Limited. Yeah. Yes, we're going to limit. So we make... and this is just a couple of years we've been doing this. We make gopher fences now around gardens or around yards or even around a whole vineyard.
6 feet tall?
No, it's actually made with a 4 foot wide gopher wire where half the wire goes underground. So we dig a trench that's 18 inches, and it goes down 18, and then there's an L at the bottom in case they dig down. They hit that L, and they tend to just follow the L. And then on the top, we have another 24 inches, and it's up 18 inches and then out 18 inches. And this barrier stops gophers, moles, some rats, bunnies, almost any.
So that would sound like a very good thing for a garden.
Oh, it's perfect for a garden.
Yeah. Now, speaking of gardens and farms, you once worked at a place called Molino Creek Farm Cooperative.
Yeah.
Which produced the best commercial tomatoes ever.
I think so. We
because they were dry farmed, organic, vine ripened tomatoes.
That's correct. We wouldn't pick too green. But
gopher heaven.
Oh, yeah, the gophers love tomatoes.
So how big was your tomato patch?
Like 23 acres.
23. All right, Thomas. 23 acres of gopher paradise. How did you deal with that?
Every day.
Every day. So you were like the gopher expert then, the of the team?
I got to be. I used every trap there is, and finally came to settle on this one trap that's the most efficient trap ever, and this technique called surface trapping. A lot of people dig a big hole and put a couple traps both directions.
Both directions, yeah.
And it takes, 10, 15 minutes, and then to check the traps, you have to unbury
them. I've watched you set a trap, and it takes you about, a minute.
That's right. In fact, I've trained a lot of people on farms and vineyards and gardens, and the idea is you need to identify where the freshest gopher run is, and then go to that one and not any of the other hills.
So step number one, find the fresh.
Open it with, we just use this Japanese knife called the hori hori to open the burrow up.
I have two of them.
Oh, good. When you open the burrow, the gopher always comes back to close the burrow because they don't like the air and they don't like the fact that animals can find their burrows that way.
Snakes.
Snakes for one, gopher snakes.
Gopher snakes, yeah.
So once you have it open, the cinch trap has this long arm in the front that just slides right into that burrow opening. And then when the gopher comes back to close the burrow, he gets caught in the gopher trap and dies in a humane way. I mean, they die in 10 seconds. And then the trap spring plate is on the outside of the ground, so without even digging it up, you can tell what's happening on the trap. So when I train people, especially on big places, like a vineyard.
Mm-hmm. Or you have a lot of acreage.
Yeah, you have to be able to go find the fresh burrow, open it, set the trap in, and be gone in 1 minute, like you said.
Sure, because you're working on the clock here.
And if you can do that, then you can not only be successful, but you don't have to use poisons. In fact, my biggest success ever was a 30,000-acre vineyard. And they called me down there to help them switch from poisons to trapping. And so they had...
So what kind of poisons would they use, and how did they use them?
Well, a lot of people are using grains.
Okay.
Like...
So grains and poison?
Grains that are anticoagulant poisons. And the other thing they use a lot is this weevil side that's called phos toxin. It's a gas that gets kind of activated. It's a tablet. You put the tablet in the ground, and the moisture in the ground activates the poison that follows the burrow and kills what's ever in it. But unfortunately, it's really dangerous, and there's been some major problems.
Well, as we know from our experiences throughout nature, whenever we introduce a toxic element like this to do one thing, it often does another thing and maybe many more other things. And using anticoagulants on ground-dwelling animals often produces fatalities in their predators, in owls and hawks.
And the reason that's so prevalent is because the anticoagulants, when the animal's poisoned by that, they get incredibly thirsty. And so they come out of their burrows and up on the ground, and then owls and hawks and bobcats and even mountain lions. All these predators have been tested, and they all have this residual poison in their system. And it makes them act kind of slower and less wary. Yeah. And so there's a lot of road kills because of that.
Get hit on the roads because... Yeah.
It's not good. And it's not good for us either.
But if you have 33,000 acres of grapes, you really have to have a good environmental conscience to call up Thomas Whitman and say, hey, can't we do this another way?
Yeah, well, the way that situation worked was the system we used. First, because a vineyard that big is broken into blocks, and the blocks might be, a half or a quarter acre, something like that. And so we would start in the middle of the blocks and work our way to the edges. And once you're there, because gophers infill really slowly, is then you just have to to work the borders. You don't have to go back into the middle of these blocks again.
Oh.
And so we do border patrol. And so using that
technique... In a green truck?
Yeah. So using that technique, we were successful. And so there's a lot of hope for any gardener or farmer.
How many people did it take to work that project with you?
They had 10 full-time people.
Okay.
Working, just doing that all day, every day.
Wow. And then going back to Molino Creek, when you had all of those acres of tomatoes, because that tomatoes are like target number one, aren't they? Or gophers?
Yeah, they really like them. I think the biggest problem here on the Central Coast for gophers is artichokes. They love eating the crown of an artichoke. So we were growing artichokes too, and a lot of other crops, but tomatoes were our biggest moneymaker, and they were the biggest thing that gophers were all into, except for like beans and stuff like that. They would just go right down a row of beans and chew the bottom off of everything.
And so you developed an affinity for one specific kind of trap. What's the trap called?
It's called the cinch gopher trap.
The cinch gopher trap. Find it at gophersunlimited.com.
Limited. Gophers limited.
Gophers limited. Oh, yeah. Don't want unlimited ones. Want limited ones. So
They sell them in, we sell them right on the web, on Amazon, and directly from our website. San Lorenzo Lumber Garden Center carries them.
In California, yeah. Now, I use a technique that's a little bit similar, only instead of a cinch trap, I use my hori-hori knife to open up a tunnel and then shove a bunch of rosebush vines down in the tunnel.
Well, that's an old Italian method.
I learned it from an old Mexican rancher. But it works.
The reason it works is because gophers and moles are both hermaphrodites.
Yeah.
Not hermaphrodites, sorry. Hemophiliacs.
Might be hermaphrodites, but they're hemophiliacs.
What was I thinking? So the prick of a rose is enough to kill a gopher. And that's why a lot of people have made trenches around their gardens and filled them with glass shards. Same reason, because a gopher gets into the glass and that's the end.
Wow. Okay, so we have two ways of dealing with this. I think your way sounds a little easier than, because I always cut myself on the rose bushes too. So. Fortunately, I'm not a hemophiliac, can survive that. But are there any other ways people come to grips with their gopher getting?
Gopher getting, well, some people use, there's ways to catch them with a string.
Are you kidding me, like a lasso?
Kind of like that, but you just lay the lasso down. You know, there's these holes that gophers make called feeding holes. They don't have any dirt around. They're just a hole in the ground. And those are the ones that they poke their head out of.
Mm-hmm.
You just put a string lasso around that hole, and then you get about 10 feet away and wait for them to poke their head up. In fact, I learned this technique from one of my daughter's students at the Waldorf School.
Wow.
Well, every day at lunch, he would catch gophers that way and put them in his lunchbox. And then take them up into the meadows above the school and release them.
We'll let them go.
It was a really beautiful thing for a kid to do.
Well, what about the ethics of that?
The ethics of moving gophers?
Yeah, catching a gopher, one of your gophers, and not wanting to destroy it or kill it, so you take it to the neighbor's property and put it on the neighbor's property. Isn't there an ethical dilemma to that?
That is ethically not true, not good. In fact, in California, it's illegal. You can't move a pest animal, but
so if you trap a skunk, what do you do with it?
You're supposed to euthanize it.
Oh, okay.
And the way that I first try to figure out how to stop the skunk from getting under your house or whatever the problem is,
closing up the access.
Yeah, and then put a one-way door so they can go out but not come back in. Oh. That way, I never catch them. But sometimes in some situations, there are skunks that I have to catch. Like there was this mobile home park. And they would always go underneath the skunks would always go underneath there.
Sure.
So you'd have to catch them.
They're all on wheels and they're above the ground. Yeah. And so they'll look for a hole to get in. And
I was working that park. I caught 56 skunks right there and I had to euthanize them all. It was really
56
sad.
Skunks in one mobile home park?
Yeah, there were people feeding skunks, and there was a barbecue where grease was dripping out of it.
So it was a major food chain going on.
Exactly.
Yeah, people feeding those kinds of critters, like people feeding bears. Bad, bad, bad people.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
So you matriculated from farming to being a full-time gopher getter.
Yeah, actually, it was a great set of serendipity. And the way it happened was I was a farmer, and then after 15 years, and when my daughter was born, I realized I needed to get health insurance. But fortunately, the university hired me to work at the teaching farm. So I worked there for 15 years and started giving lectures there. And it turned out I started getting clients, and pretty soon, I had so many clients, I said, you know what? Maybe I don't need to work here anymore, and I could work for myself.
And what could be more fun than working for yourself, helping people do what they simply must do, which is get the damn gopher before the gopher gets you.
Well, either get it or barricade your gardener so it doesn't come in.
There you go. This is the Food Chain. We will be right back. We're going to learn lots more about getting the darn gophers when we get back with Thomas Whitman. Gophers Limited. Not limited. Stay tuned.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Port Ideas, Greg Williams.
There's a tremendous amount of useful information in MetroFarm for farming in or near the city.
Acres USA's Charles Walters.
MetroFarm tells how to convert an opportunity into a real going concern. Every chapter is organized around the logic of practicality. For every problem needing a solution, MetroFarm offers a progression of steps arranged in sequence so the desired goal is achieved.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org, the food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org, farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale during the opening moments, 7 December 1941.
As we left our berth and got underway, the deck force was still engaged in getting ready for combat. Fuller had the job of clearing the deck of all the wooden objects that had collected in port, so Fuller was making his way aft, just tossing stuff like a madman, when he came to the ice cream freezer. Before he could toss it over the side, one of the guys said, "Hey, wait a minute!" In a matter of seconds, the lock was broken and the ice cream distributed among the crew. So, what you saw that morning was the USS Dale steaming hell-bent out to the channel while the guys back aft were standing by their guns, eating ice cream, and watching World War II break out all around.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Thomas Whitman. Gophers Limited, serving the Central California coast with gopher getting. Ladies and gentlemen, here on the Central Coast, it is spring, and the rains have been falling. The soil is soft. New life is springing forth, and so are the gophers. What is the season of the gopher, Thomas? It seems like right now they're gearing up to destroy us all.
They are, or at least our plants, anyway.
Our plants, yeah.
I've been bitten by a gopher. It's kind of they scary, but they're kind of like bulldogs. They bite you, and they don't let go. Anyway, a gopher lives.
So
like,
wait a minute. You had your hand down a burrow. What were you looking for? Trouble?
It was before I was wearing gloves all the time.
Okay.
But I was cleaning out the burrow. Sometimes there's really big burrows, and so I was cleaning it out, and a gopher grabbed a hold of my finger, and I pulled it out, and it was still on my finger. It wouldn't let go.
Wow.
It was bleeding and everything. But the good thing about gophers is they're solitary animals, so they don't carry any diseases. Mm-hmm. So anyway, gophers live like 3, maybe 4 years at the most. They're not very long-lived, and they have one litter, sometimes 2 litters a year if the weather's really good. And they usually have those litters in the spring, like right now, March, April. So this is the time when you need to start catching gophers. In fact, I do advise people to catch gophers all winter because they work all through the year. They don't take a break in the winter or hibernate or anything. So
are there holes easier to spot in winter when there's not a lot of ground cover growing?
Oh, yeah, that's the best time.
So that's the best time to go after them.
Like if you're a farmer or a gardener and you clean your garden, then you can see if anything's making burrows. So the wintertime is the best time to eliminate or reduce the breeding population. Now, gophers are really mobile, too. They come out of their burrows at night and walk around and find new places that are maybe have more food than the place they were at before.
Is that why owls are so effective?
Oh, yeah. The barn owl is the most effective for gophers because gophers come out at night and they run around.
So do owls. There you are.
Yeah. In fact, a family of barn owls, and a lot of people actually build barn owl boxes just for this reason, can catch anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 gophers a year. In fact, there's even this new group in California and maybe other states too now called Raptors Are the Solution. They're pretty interesting. They're putting billboards up all over the place. There's one in Moss Landing right now.
It's almost like we're coming to grips with the fact that everything we did to control our universe, our nature, had a great way of throwing the balance out of sorts, so we're continually chasing after that balance that nature was so kind to put in the first place.
That's exactly right. Well, with gophers, growing a garden is putting the balance a little askew. I mean, because you're offering more food.
Yeah, and they're in a concentrated location.
Yeah, so they're like, all right, let's go.
Yeah, so I recently did a show with a commercial beekeeper who does pollination services for the almond industry in California. And boy, when those almond trees go off, it's really a sight to behold.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's stunningly beautiful. And the bees are very happy. But when the blossoms fall, there's nothing left for the bees to do.
I know, so they move the bees to somewhere else.
Yeah. And I also did another show wherein the assertion was made by a beekeeper that the best place to raise bees is in the city, because that's where most of the diversity still exists. Whereas out in the country, a lot of the diversity has been plowed under fence post to fence post with one kind of crop.
That's true.
And even the borders of the fields have been denuded in fear of bugs and whatnot.
See, the other thing we were getting to, Michael, is that the gophers do have a life pattern. And as I said earlier, they only live for like 4 years at the most. And during that period, and a lot of people say, well, gosh, if gophers are territorial, then how do they ever meet their mate?
But I know the answer already.
You do?
Yes, social media.
Social media. That's a good answer. Actually, the way that gophers are attracted, the way that male gophers are attracted to female gophers is pheromones. Mm-hmm. And so they're out at night.
It's just kind of like a chemical digital message service, right?
Oh, yeah. It's just like they use pheromones to get insects to get confused. They call it a confusion technique. And so they use these pheromones to... they have tried using pheromones on cotton balls, and they drop them out of airplanes. And the cotton balls have the female pheromone. And so the male gophers are really confused, and they can't find that female. And so it lowers the population. I do contact a lot of gopher catchers all over the United States. And I did find this family in Arizona that were doing the pheromone method. And they were like, I was talking to like the fourth generation gopher catcher in this family. And he says, yeah, I can tell where the females are and where the males are. I said, how can you tell? He said, I can smell them.
You get a lot of people calling for help. Tell us about some of your customers. Kind of give a thumbnail of who needs help with gophers. It seems like just about everybody that has any kind of property to deal with. Even I can think of schoolyards would be desperate to deal with gophers when it gets right down to it, because you have children running about getting tripped up in gopher holes.
That's true. It's a tripping hazard on any ball field. And so I do get a lot of questions from schools. In fact, I've trained schools all over California on how to do this. Because, first of all, the trapping is hard on a schoolyard because kids will always mess with the traps.
You'll find them. Oh, look at this.
And so the cinch trap, which I use the most, is obvious. I mean, it's pretty obvious. So I started putting like a clay pot or a milk crate or even orange cones on top of them. So orange cones are one of those ubiquitous things in the environment that you just accept. So, but the problem is, if you have a cone over a gopher trap or anything, and the gopher's trying to block the light from getting and air from getting into the burrow, and the trap misses them, the gopher will fill the cone completely to the top with soil.
Wow.
So then you have another problem you have to deal with, is all that soil and the fact of where did it all come from.
How long does it take for a gopher to do something like that?
Just overnight. They're really good workers.
What do you do for a schoolyard then? That well, has a bunch of kids running around and there's...
I have to hide the traps. Mm-hmm. So I end up using a different trap. I like using the, it's called the Gophinator trap. It's a really small stainless steel trap you can conceal underground. But then you have to be able to find it again. So
you have to flag it or something.
Well, if I flag it, then the kids take the flags. So what I have to do is cover it up, make it look, put the grass back on the area so it looks like nothing happened. And then I just spray a little dot with marking chalk. And usually I can find him again. I guess I could use GPS, but...
Schoolyards sound to me like a real tough nut to crack when it gets right down to
they
it.
They are
because
hard.
Because of the kids.
The other thing I use in schoolyards is carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. In fact, I actually invented this thing I call the carbon dioxide injector. The reason I originally invented it was to use it for euthanization of larger animals. But then I realized, well, since carbon dioxide's heavier than ambient air, that if I injected it into a gopher burrow, it would just follow the burrow. And it actually is sort of effective. Nothing's really 100% effective with gophers.
I know, because they're very clever. They're mean, too. So with a carbon, do you have a hook it up to a little motor?
No, you hook it up to a carbon dioxide tank.
A regular tank.
From a beverage company. Uh-huh. So it's, you know, it's food grade and everything. So,
What about explosives? Now, I've seen good, incredible video of where people pump propane or something into a tunnel and then light it off and it goes kaboom.
Yeah, I actually have a couple of those tools, and I stopped using them years ago. It's called the gopher torch, they call it. Mm-hmm. Rodent torch, because they use it for ground squirrels and gophers and any burrowing animal. But you have to be really, really careful about, well, especially ground squirrels, because other animals like lizards and burrowing owls use abandoned ground squirrel burrows. So if you put anything in there.
It's an indiscriminate blower-upper.
Yeah. But the idea is that the oxygen and propane is dispersed into the burrow system, and then there's a spark plug at the end of the tool, and you press this button, and everything blows up. And if it's a gopher burrow, and those burrows are usually less than 6 inches underground, it'll blow the burrow right up out of the ground and cave it in. So the gopher has to dig a new burrow, which makes it easier to catch manually. But the rodent torch has its drawbacks. And the first drawback is it sounds like a shotgun when it goes off. And so I learned that I have to call the police before I use them, because people are really wary of gunshots these days.
Yeah, I bet.
So I call the police first, and I say, you know, I'm going to be using this rodent torch, and it's going to be here, and
that's a good idea.
It's always a good idea. Yeah. So they usually come out anyway because they're curious about what it looks like and what it does.
Here comes the sheriff. Right. So I live in a neighborhood with a lot of lawns, a lot of gardens, and a lot of people who spend a lot of time in their gardens. Where do they start coming to grips with getting the gopher?
Well,
they look at their garden bed and they see a sure sign of gopher. What to do?
Well, a lot of people are building these raised beds,
right,
that have wooden sides, or now you can even buy these metal sides, and some people make brick sides and stuff. But the vulnerable part of these beds is that gophers go under them and come up and eat your stuff, so you have to put wire on the bottom. And of course, if you put if you use the stainless steel wire, it's going to last as long as the bed is. But if you use something that's less,
you have to use stainless steel, otherwise it just rots away and the gophers walk right in.
Right. I don't want to talk about other people's products.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
But there's not many people doing a heavy stainless steel. There's stainless steel options out there that are thin. But
Thomas has the kind when it comes to gophers, keeping gophers out. It's a substantial, no mess around stainless steel wire product. And you use it in industrial settings as well as home and garden, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, commercial folks use them. Now vineyards are starting to use them, because that's another place where gophers are a problem, is not necessarily the older vineyards, but the young vineyards.
Yeah.
They like young things.
Sure.
And in fact, figs are their favorite food.
Ah.
Growing figs is really,
I'm going to watch my fig tree.
You have to do something about it. So often for small shrubs and trees, you can just use a basket, and we make baskets in 5, 10, 15 gallon, and now we make a 25 gallon basket.
So when you use the baskets, the tender roots grow outside the basket and are vulnerable to being eaten, but the main core of the root system is safe.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some plants, like the 25-gallon basket, we originally made for the cannabis people, because mm-hmm. people are growing at home and the gophers love the cannabis, and so.
Oh, really?
Instead of using poisons, a lot of people use poisons because, you know, rats like it too. The baskets are low and wide, and cannabis roots are low and go laterally.
Are cinch traps easy to use?
They are, but you have to have a certain amount of hand strength.
Okay. If we were to go to your website, would you have a demonstration video maybe?
Oh, there's tons and lots of videos.
Oh.
Not only my website, I also have a YouTube channel. It's a channel that tells you exactly how to do it. It's got videos, and it tells you if you're not catching them, these are the reasons. It's called
a... Oh, if you're not being effective, it'll tell you why you're not.
Advanced tips.
Cool.
And the YouTube channel is just Gophers Limited.
And there you go.
People love it. Because I don't want to just do the job for them. I want to teach people how to do it.
There you go.
Because, you know, it's like if you teach them to catch a gopher.
And then they call you anyway. Well, a lot of fun. As always with Thomas Whitman, he's the proprietor of Gophers Limited. And I always admire your work because it sounds like and it looks like you're having fun. When you walk into a garden with your hoary, hoary knife. And all the gophers shriek out.
What could be better than having a job where you're always in nature?
There you go. Very good.
So you want to know how to get in touch with me?
Really quickly.
831-335-2400.
What about your website?
Gopherslimited.com.
There you go. Thank you all for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Last from the past, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.